We're starting small. We got customers who trust us. They're coming to us with problems and saying like, hey, look, we use XYZ every day. We don't use this tool. But if you did these three things to it, we think this changes the game for us.
This is The Dime. Dive into the cannabis and hemp industry through trends, insights, predictions, and tangents.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Dime. I'm Brian Fields, and with me, as always, is Kellen Finney. And this week, we've got a very special guest, Rick Bashkoff. Rick, thanks for taking time. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys. Excited to be here.
Excited to have you. Kellen, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Really excited to talk to Rick. Really excited to talk cannabis and software, you know? And I'm more excited to understand how, like, the West Coast is influencing the East Coast markets. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I think that's a creative way to try to find this, but I'm just going to come right out and be honest, since Rick and I both have East Coast roots. Rick, exactly your location, please. And if you had to choose a loyalty to the East Coast or West Coast, where would it be?
Yeah, so I am in New York. I live just north of New York City. I lived in the city for about 15 years. I was born in New York. There's no question here. East Coast all day.
Let the record reflect, Kellen. So Rick, for our listeners, unfamiliar about you, can you give a background about yourself and how you got into the cannabis industry?
Yeah, sure. So I actually started in the music industry at one of the major record labels, Warner Music Group. I actually followed my brother there who had a job, and I was kind of looking for what to do out of college. And I had a blast. Like, I was in my early 20s. Like, music industry is a lot of fun. Turns out I'm not like such a great corporate citizen. So I started managing some of the relationships with like Google and YouTube and Yahoo back in the day. And I just loved software companies. Like, I just thought it was so cool. Like, the problem solution construct, it's how my mind works. I like the smaller, you know, startups that I was meeting with under the Warner Music Group banner, and just kind of, it was just looked a lot more fun and looked a lot more, I could do a lot more. And so I left in 2008. It was the best move I made. Like, within weeks of hitting the first startup that I was at, I kind of found home in the chaos, which I know you guys both understand. And so, yeah, so from there, I spent some tenure at two different startups in the New York scene. And around like 2016 or so, being a part of early stage startups and being on the business side of startups and kind of the product and operations side, you know, I had access to early stage investing, mainly from raising the capital at the startups, but just found it so interesting taking bets on early entrepreneurs. You know, I myself am more kind of like the person behind the entrepreneur, but I'm fascinated by entrepreneurs, the mindset, the problem solving, like I mentioned earlier. And so I was really into it. And so I stuck it out with two software companies. They both did pretty well. And then, you know, around 2016, some of the stuff was starting to wear off for me. And so I started poking around a little bit, lifetime cannabis user, and, you know, showed up in 2016 or so, just tried to get a lay of the land and had like a borderline panic attack. Like, I felt like a decade late, right? It was like all this activity had already happened, and it was happening without me even knowing. And so I had made a couple of investments just to try and understand the industry a little bit. And within like 6 months of that first investment, my wife kind of sat me down and was like, dude, this is happening. Why don't you get on with it? Like, or you're going to go full time in cannabis eventually. So yeah, I entered in late 2018 or 2019 with a VC firm. I spent a lot of time on kind of the early stage investment in software space since I've been in cannabis, but I've been here about 5 years now, and I'm currently running a software company that has two products. One's called Lit Alerts, which is a sales enablement and competitive intelligence tool, and Cannaversions, which is automated email for dispensaries. So I'm back at home in the chaos with two early stage software products, and yeah, couldn't be happier about it.
So before we kind of dive into those companies, I want to know, software aside, your background, not as a developer, not in coding, correct?
Correct. Yep. I've definitely like dabbled to kind of make myself a little dangerous, right? So I've taken, you know, some courses at whether it's General Assembly or something like that, just to get like some basics of HTML, CSS, Python. You know, when you're like a business and operations person at a startup, you know, sometimes you're doing everything, right? You're doing everything from doing the demos to making the website, doing the website update, you guys know, right? And so it just gets to a point, and I think this really is the difference between kind of a more early stage startup person, more corporate person, is just like, oh, if I don't know CSS, like, I'm going to go to W3 schools and figure it out, right? And so that's kind of more of my coding and developer. I'm like, I know enough to be dangerous to be able to like talk with our CTO, but I can't build anything personally. Although at Google AppSheet, I'm starting to play around with, and that's kind of cool. And, you know, pretty easy, you know, developers for dummies kind of thing.
So in those early days, you were just a VC kind of helping bring capital to the space, learning. At what point did you decide to actually get your feet wet and start jumping into actual operations? And why was that was there a motive behind that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an operator at heart. I think that like my investing activity has been much more of a passion project, like capital and cannabis, one of the biggest problems, right? And
yeah,
having a little bit of a knowledge base there, it seemed like a wide open opportunity to try and bring some capital that otherwise cannabis companies would not have access to. But I'd say that like I'm definitely an operator at heart. And so I was looking for the right companies to jump on board with. I was with a company called Lucid Green for about a year and a half, doing some really interesting things in the supply chain optimization space. So to me, it's like I'm looking for that kind of outsized upside, but also at the stage where there's still like a tremendous amount of chaos, because that's kind of what I like. And what I'm decent at kind of approaching, where I think there's a certain type of person who finds that off-putting. I find that, you know, exciting.
Yeah, I think that's so perfectly well described. And I think that kind of summarizes the cannabis industry as a whole, right? And the entrepreneurs that kind of operate in here, because you're right, it is complete chaos, right? And it takes someone like yourself who recognizes that, oh, that'll be the marketing department. Oh, that's the technology leader, do that. And then you look around, you're like, oh, it's just me. I got to do all these different hats. And at the end of the day, the buck stops with you. And if you're not able to overcome these challenges of the unknowns, things kind of get caught. So it seems like where you are is that you're recognizing that the industry is loaded with problems, and you recognize that some of the solutions out there, specifically from the software side, aren't an all-in-one solution, right? So your team feels like it's attacking the software side and looking like problem solution, which has kind of been the mindset you got when you got into the space. Can you kind of elaborate on that?
For sure. I mean, so I think, like, you know, all respect to the first wave, but there's a second wave of software company coming in cannabis, ruthlessly focused on the customer, you know, building lean teams, not going out and raising a lot of capital. And I think the industry's kind of been trained that way, right? Because the capital hasn't been available in a little bit of time. And so, you know, out of necessity, you know, the industry's kind of birthing these really young, scrappy tech companies that I think are going to change the way the cannabis tech stack works. If you look outside of cannabis, there's way more interoperability. There's way more kind of cooperation between different stages of the supply chain. So I was at Canna DataCon 2 weeks ago. Great convention for anyone looking to solve some of these issues in the cannabis space. But you know, there were some really interesting things brought up there in terms of like, we just have some basic data cleaning and data quality problems that we all have to kind of come together and agree on ways to solve. Because you know, one of the things that I heard that I thought was so smart was, you know, this industry is not ready for AI until we have structured data that we can actually, you know, right? Because bad information in, bad information out, right? And so we find that, you know, the crew that I'm working with, we find that incredibly exciting. And I think, look, like, you have the first wave to come through, they lay the infrastructure, we got a second wave coming through that will be, you know, slightly disruptive, but also very much value add to the industry. Because I think all of us are going to go really deep on one or two things and just be the best at, whether it's sales enablement or wholesale or cultivation tech, like just going really deep instead of saying, look, we're going to try and solve all the problems across all of, you know, we're going to be all in one, you know, pitch, I think has kind of run its course in cannabis. So we're really excited. Like, we've spent a lot of time over the last 2 months in particular, kind of trying to figure out who we're going to align with in that space, because we've got customers coming to us and saying like, hey, it would be great if you guys did an integration with X, right? So then another signal that, you know, these early stage companies that are coming up now, like we're taking our cues from customers, not from investors, not from research. We're taking our cues directly from customers.
And I think that's so big too. I mean, I think the one difference between like the first wave and the second wave is that like the first wave was kind of like, you had a lot of people that, it's a brand new industry, right? There was never like, your opinion was just as valuable as anyone else's opinion. And the customer really hadn't had time to give feedback to that first wave. And now with the second wave, we actually see there's established customers, there's a little bit of data, and all of these things can like feed into decision-making process for like what problems actually need to be solved within the industry, right? And so between those two things, how much did participating in startups prior to cannabis actually help you understand that like, hey, this is just par for the course when you're running a software company in general, and it's not just the cannabis space? Because I think a lot of people kind of get that twisted in terms of like, oh, it's cannabis, that's why it's so crazy, you know what I mean? But also there is that in other startups as well.
For sure. I love that question because it goes back to what we were talking about before, and just like training yourself to be calm, I think is one of the things, because look, there's going to be enough people around in early stage startups that are lighting their hair on fire and trying to like, you know, like figure out all the answers tomorrow. There really needs to be someone in the company who, there's got to be someone at the company eventually who gets everyone to take a deep breath and says, okay, you know, I was just talking with someone about this the other day. It's like, we wake up some mornings and like, you know, the crew that's working on Lit Alerts and Cannaversions will be like, it seems like we have five number one priorities today, do we not? You know, and it's like, which one of these are we actually going to do? And can we, you know, keep ourselves calm? Some of it's great. I mean, some of it just comes from raw excitement. You know, we got a pipeline of features that are coming directly from our customers that we want to answer as quickly as possible. But then there's other things that, as you guys know, in tech that are quite boring sometimes, whether it's infrastructure or database cleanups or things like that, that they really have to happen. I mean, you know, I love one of the co-founders of Lit Alerts, the CTO. You know, if we see a bad signal of data, we turn it off. And I think that's just a simple thing that you can do at a startup early is be very proactive about ensuring that the integrity of your product stays in place, right? And you don't kind of get off on tangents and I'm going to go fix this thing now. No, if we've got bad data in, just shut it off for now. We're going to figure out the solution and then reintroduce that data stream back into the product. So I think having that type of discipline is something that I picked up before I came into cannabis. And that I think would be the thing that I would point to that has helped me. As others have kind of come in as like, this is chaos, I'm usually the one in the room who's like, yeah, we're going to figure this out. Might take us a half a decade, but we're going to figure this out.
Yeah, I'm glad that you shared that because I am the chaos. And Kellen is probably laughing because it's the truth. But
I saw that. I saw that interaction.
He definitely signaled at me that I am the chaos, which is true. You're right. I will openly admit that. But unfortunately, the way I feel that is that we have challenges. And if we're not exasperating every opportunity to try to overcome those, and I understand slow playing certain critical ones, but other ones, I'd rather just push it forward, break it, fix it, keep it moving versus looking for the perfect solution. Because at the end of the day, what you said, Rick, is ideal. The customer will tell you what is important and what is not to. And if you're not positioning these assets directly in front of the customer, you might be arguing about something that is irrelevant because the customer might not even benefit from that.
Right. And I think that, you know, to be clear, I have a massive appreciation for the chaos mind because it's the mind that pushes the company forward. And if you're more someone like me, who's the operator, who, you know, tends to try and be the calm voice, you have to have an appreciation for the entrepreneur mind and how their brains work, how their heart ticks. It's different than your average person who, like me, like I'm the focus of the company, right? And so, you know, we've got on our team, we've got a hustler, we've got a leader, we've got a couple of people that play different roles. It's important to kind of recognize, you know, the balance. So there are times, I agree with you, Brian, like there are times that even in my like stay focused and stay calm, the directive is let's charge forward. Let's just, you know, go forward, break something and fix it later. And I think making the calls between the two, you know, can be challenging, but also quite rewarding if you're working with, you know, with the right group.
Yeah. And I think one of the hardest things about that too, is sometimes it's like, personally, at least, like, I want things to like be perfect, right? Sometimes. And like, sometimes it's not, but you just literally have to push forward and be like, we'll come back and we'll put the paint on later, right? Like, but it's hard mentally to like accept that and just like move on to the next task. Sometimes it can be challenging.
It is. No, it is. It's really challenging. And I think something for us that we've tried to do recently is we've just tried to prioritize based off of biggest impact. And I know it sounds like the most obvious thing, right? But what am I talking about in terms of impact? I'm talking about more user time, more value for the customer, right? It's not always dollars and cents. It's, okay, we're seeing a drop off in usage because of X. If we patch that, our usage goes in the other direction versus maybe opening up a new state. We don't know what's going to happen in that state, right? So like, biggest impact, should probably fix this bug today because the current users are going to increase their usage, word of mouth, yada, yada, yada. And so, you know, I think that, you know, making those trade-offs can be quite difficult. But necessary.
I think that's really, really well said. And I think having that North Star of understanding what the metrics of success are and building it for that customer will allow everything else to kind of fall into place. Because exactly like you're saying, if you build that for the ideal customer and it picks up, people will recommend it to their friends and their colleagues. And that is how I think adoption works, specifically in software in the cannabis industry, because everyone's fighting endless problems. And as Kellen alluded to before we hopped on, is that some of these companies are just operating just to survive. And if that, there's additional tools that they can pick up to supplement, like minimize resources or opportunities to grow their business, it has to make sense for them. But it also has to be one where like they kind of get some social pressure from others and say, hey, did that work? Because not everyone's afforded the financial opportunity to risk a new software adoption that doesn't immediately come in and implement an immediate success.
Right. I think that when we think about solving problems for the customer, we really try to resist the urge to release cool stuff as opposed to what has been specifically identified, right? We might not be all that excited about what we're releasing, but, you know, again, it's discipline, right? It's maintaining the focus of like, okay, our purpose here is to serve the customer and to ensure that we are meeting a need and actually solving a problem versus, you know, I gave you this thing that's got all the bells and whistles. You don't use any of them. It's unfortunately become kind of commonplace, especially with, you know, particularly in data and some of those types of data analysis and insights tools. You know, what we answered in terms of a need is we just heard a lot of people saying like, look, I get it. The data's there. Really hard to find what I need and really hard to get that data out, right? That which speaks to the interoperability. If you look outside of cannabis, I'm telling you, you know, these companies across the gamut, they compete. They agree to the same standards. They work together. There is, you know, some sense of the ability for the customer to choose and build their own tech stack that fits their needs, as opposed to, hey, I got these 10 features. You got, you know, these are the ones we got. Use them all. I'll take care of everything in your business for you. And so I'm looking forward to a lot of these companies kind of getting their feet on the ground and starting to work together, because I think it's going to mean ultimately more flexibility for brands, wholesalers, and retailers.
Do you think that there's certain people who don't have software backgrounds that could fit into some of these companies? And I want to get into the companies in a little bit, but like from a mentality standpoint, obviously to be in the cannabis industry, you need to have grit, resiliency, and an openness to kind of solve problems. But do you think those same skill sets can apply to someone, let's say, who's not a developer, who can utilize tools like ChatGPT in order to take all these variables in and then just understand that just needs to put together the piece of the puzzle in order to solve the problem?
Absolutely. I mean, we are in the no code era, right? So I think that if you can build a website, if you can use Google Drive, if you can use some of these basic interfaces, I think you can play, because there's a lot of, look, we talked about this before, just scrappiness, right? Like just being able to problem solve is a skill set that is needed at a software company, right? So that is more in the track of like business and operations and customer success. When people think of software companies, like for the most part in cannabis, these are companies that are, you know, their first hires are definitely engineers, developers, but behind that, it's customer success. Right. It's not sales first, because you've got the co-founders or, you know, the person who's operating the business leading sales and as it should be, you know, getting the first customers and scaling the business. And where I think across venture and across early stage software, not just in cannabis, you know, for about a half decade there, we got away with just, you know, you got an idea, you raise some money, you hire a bunch of people. Right. And that includes a sales team, and that includes a marketing team, and that includes a whole, you know, swath of people that, you know, you're operating a company instead of figuring out what your company is, right? From day one. And, you know, like we kid around, my co-founders, Nate, Cody, and Austin and myself, like we kid around sometimes, like honestly, like we're not really operating a company just yet, right? Like we've got two products that are flying and we're really excited about it, but we don't operate like a company. You know, we don't have HR. We don't have, you know, like we're a very automated, scrappy, lean company. Now the goal is to get there, right? But I think we're kind of, like I said, I think this new breed is kind of flipping the script. We're starting small. We've got, you know, customers who trust us. They're coming to us with problems and saying like, hey, look, we use XYZ every day. We don't use this tool, but if you did these three things to it, we think this changes the game for us, right? So when you have that like inbound coming from your customers, I think it's like incredibly exciting. And I think most people outside of cannabis that have some type of problem-solving skill set can lend a hand there and be one of those first employees that comes on, opens up their ears for customers, and just delivers a high quality of service. So if you can do something like that, if you've got a skill set or a background that has those skills, I think you're a top candidate for, you know, an early hire for a software company and get in on something fun. I mean, like you could become the head of customer success in 2 years, right? That was to me when I moved from corporate to start. I'll just lay it out. So I'm sitting in a conference room. I'm 27 years old and I look around and everyone's like 50, right? And I'm like, if I don't get out of here, I'm going to be here forever, right? Because they keep putting things in front of me. And so when I bounced, you know, it was, you know, you get out of that comfort zone, but I took so many skills from that, even my big corporate, right? I took so many of those skills over to the startup. I was able to stay calm. I was able to be that kind of like calming effect for the company because, you know, look, at Warner Music Group, you know, at 25, I was getting yelled at by some of the, you know, biggest executives in music. And so I had to figure out, you know, so that was a skill. I bring that up just because there's skills that you take from your past and you can bring them forward. And I think that's no different with cannabis software for sure. But I would say, you know, customer success is by far, I think, the most in need.
What do you think the biggest difference is operating a software company outside of cannabis versus operating one inside of cannabis industry?
Yeah, stability of customers, I would say, is by far the biggest, right? Is, you know, look, when I was selling software to like enterprise level entertainment companies, you don't have to worry about things like collections. You don't have to worry about things like massive turnover constantly. You know, you guys said it when we started off, right? Like lots of things that are way out of all of our control that we have to account for. And unfortunately, those are the big differences because a lot of the stuff is still the same. And I don't mean to say that there isn't uniqueness to cannabis specific software, because I think the uniqueness, like, look, I've had this question as an investor, like, why does cannabis need specific software? Well, goes back to the purpose of the software companies, right? We're solving problems. Those problems are unique to cannabis. So therefore, you're going to have software that's unique to that industry, right? And so I think that, you know, if you're at a software company outside of cannabis, I think there are far less customer issues and far less customer chaos on some level. But, you know, I think, you know, we feel very strongly that that's a short term problem in cannabis and that, you know, over the next few years, things are going to continue to get better. And so we're definitely, you know, as a co-founding team and myself as the GM, the team at Little Arts and Cannaversions is pretty bullish on some of this kind of evening itself out. And maybe we'll be able to act like a normal startup.
So let's hop into Cannaversions and what is the problem it is solving for the cannabis industry?
Yeah, so great story. So our co-founders, Nate and Cody, Nate is actually a dispensary owner, Bloom Brothers in Pittsfield. Very successful dispensary in Western Massachusetts. Nate's got a great reputation in Massachusetts. He's literally, you know, open to store almost immediately, actually right before COVID. So he's got quite the grit in him to make it through all of that. But, you know, look, Nate had a very simple problem. You know, as a single store operator, he doesn't have a tremendous amount of resources for marketing. You know, there are very robust tool sets out in the market for marketing services, including those outside of cannabis, HubSpot, Klaviyo. MailChimp has basically pissed off the entire industry, but they were here at one point. And then you have the SpringBigs and the AIQs that have like a pretty robust feature set. You know, some folks, like, they just need some very simple tools, right? We always talk about, we focus on three things: simplicity, automation, and cost effective. So what Nate did was, he was like, look, I need some very basic automated emails. I want to get my abandoned carts in line. I want to, you know, do some win back campaigns where you're going to a customer who you haven't seen in a while. And, you know, he was basically like, I just need a very simple tool that allows me to set up these kind of automated email flows. And so he partnered with an old friend of his who's an online marketing executive, and they built the tool. And, you know, Nate started using it, started to have some success with it, and, you know, others in the market wanted it. And so, you know, fast forward to today, we're in 120 locations. That business is growing steadily. We're working with a lot of agencies, some of the top agencies in cannabis that really own that retailer relationship. Look, like, we know what we are. We're a tool in the toolkit, right? We don't necessarily have to own every single customer relationship. But Cannaversions is a great, simple, automated tool. It's the set and forget solution for dispensaries for email marketing. And we're planning on some, you know, expanding that feature set. So to go back to what we're talking about, we're starting small. There's got a couple of use cases that we're solving for with the tool, and our customers are telling us where they want us to take it.
I think my favorite part of that whole story was twofold, right? It was one was the fact that he built the tool for himself first, meaning that he had a problem and he recognized that the solution did not exist, which was an easy one. Hey, I built this. This helped me. People recognized, hey, I have that same problem. Can I use that tool? Light bulb goes off. Hey, maybe this is a tool that works. And the second part that I think is really beneficial is the simplicity of it, right? We're all talking about how we're running so many different hats, and having the ability to use a tool that you can hop in with, let's say, a minimal learning curve and edit to apply it and to immediately set up some of these important aspects, set it and forget it, is so, so critical. With him juggling all these items, if he had to do a 2-week learning curve, it just wouldn't be worth it. By the time he got started, half the building would be on fire and it would have to be another problem he'd have to focus on.
Well, and I think also specifically in the marketing space in cannabis, it's one of the first places that gets cut as the industry ebbs and flows, right? And so let's say you set up, you know, an entire team or, you know, an entire system, and then it comes time that, you know, things are different and that marketing manager moves on, or, you know, there's churn for one reason or another. You're losing all that knowledge base and you kind of have to start over, right? With these types of tools that are automated and simple, you know, they don't really experience that downturn as your company ebbs and flows, and you're able to kind of keep your stack, your tech stack in line if you keep things simple. And again, you know, interoperable. We integrate directly with menu providers. We integrate with some of the other email providers to ensure that we're not double messaging. And just keep things super transparent. You know, we found that customers are really leaning into that, right? Simplicity, transparency, you know, pretty basic things about business, right? And so these guys did the same thing with Little Arts. They found a really interesting use case and just sprinted to take care of it. And I can tell you guys more about that as we move on.
Do you have to deal with different like state regulations from a marketing perspective? I know that like some states you can't put billboards up, right? Like, how does that factor into like launching into a new state as well as like maintaining all these different states?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, for the most part, like for email marketing in particular, you know, there's a set of best practices that kind of get you that common denominator compliance thread. It's not as difficult as the differences in compliance and let's say for security or, you know, something that includes hard assets. You know, for us, there's a variety of best practices in terms of the actual messaging that the retailers put in their email templates that encourage remaining within compliance. It's a challenge, though. Like it is an ever-changing landscape. I'm here in New York. I could do a whole episode on what's wrong with the marketing regulations in New York. But I think there's lots of attention on that, right? And will kind of resolve itself again over time. But here's my biggest frustration, right, with this topic. And I'm happy that you asked it because I can rant for a second. So we're always talking about how education is the tip of the iceberg, right? For pushing our industry forward, decreasing, reefer madness that still exists in pockets of the country. But then on the other hand, regulators are handcuffing you as it relates to marketing and advertising. And so those two things competing are very frustrating for someone like myself who's focused on, you know, normalizing the plant, using software to get the message out of the benefits and really bring people into the regulated market as opposed to the illicit market. And so I think I'm hoping, look, I'm not the one who should be in the rooms doing the advocacy and dealing with politicians. I don't have the style to do that. That's a skill in its own. But you know, the people that do and the people that I respect that do this, you know, I think that they have started to realize that there's a connection between the two. Whereas before they were kind of arguing over basic like advertising and marketing requirements. Now it's getting to the point where it's like, how are we supposed to compete with the illicit market if we can't message the community? How are we supposed to do that, right? And so I think the time has come. There's lots of organizations who are focused on this. And hopefully the next time we chat, when you ask me that question, I can tell you like, you know, not as much of an issue anymore, Kellen. But yeah, it's the thorn in the side of any marketer in cannabis right now, for sure.
It's certainly challenging. So let's keep it going. And Lit Alerts, tell us what's the USP for Lit Alerts and who is listening to this, who should be thinking about applying it to their current business?
Yeah. So one of the reasons we're excited about Lit Alerts is it's much more broadly applicable. So the tool has use case for brands, wholesalers, retailers. We're even getting into some just straight up cultivators who are looking at the tool. So let me tell you what it is, because you know we're super excited and we've had just a tremendous opening chapter to the story. So same thing, Nate and Cody kind of, you know, they've got Cannaversions going. They're like, what are we doing next? There's other things that we could be doing. And the problem that they went after is the old problem of wholesalers and brands and retailers not having the data to share in real time to make, you know, critical decisions in market. And so, you know, you have a lot of folks in the space, got kind of a first and second wave of folks who have attacked this problem. But the way that they attacked it, I think, is really interesting. So the data source for us is actually retailer websites, the dispensary websites. So what we're doing is we've built a crawler, not unlike Google, that goes out and looks at these menus on an hourly basis, almost every hour that these dispensaries are open. So it's a tremendous amount of data that we are ingesting on an hourly basis. We're then taking a look at those differences between the snapshots of these menus and making inferences about the activities in market. So that includes low quantity, out of stocks, pricing changes, you know, all types of sales enablement and competitive intelligence tactics that every seller and every field marketer is using or trying to replicate. So we went out and said, okay, what are the problems that you're seeing? How do you want this to look from a tooling perspective? And, you know, look, the first thing we had to do was validate the data set. You know, we're making inferences based off of menu snapshots. And so earlier this year in the summer, the co-founders took on a group of initial customers, kind of like, look, let's put this data in your hands, walk it into the buyer, you know, bring it into your marketing meeting to show us that we're, you know, to give us a signal of whether or not we're on point here. And lucky for us, our CTO, our founding partner, a co-founder, Austin, he built a tool that was dangerously close out of the gate. And so getting that signal halfway through the summer, you know, these guys knew that it was time to turn it up a bit. So what they did next was they brought in kind of like a second wave of customers to kind of help build out the feature set. And so by about October, we had brought on our first customers, first paying customers, and the growth has been great. I mean, we've got 40 active customers currently, a very active pipeline, and we're definitely getting to a point now, which I'm super excited about, which is we're overwhelmed. And so if we're overwhelmed, we got to be doing something right. But yeah, let me just really quickly tell you about some of the features, because some of the stuff is just too cool. So what you can do within Lit Alerts is basically, whether it's your own brand or a competitive brand, you can add the brand to what we call the Brands Explorer. And what that allows you to do is sift through all the menu listings. That includes the pricing, imaging, the categories. You can really do some pretty amazing competitive intelligence, which is the first thing.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah,
can you
absolutely
give us an example with like a brand?
100%. So, so if you are, let's say Miss Grass, right? I'm always going to go with Miss Grass. You know that. So let's say you're Miss Grass, right? And you're trying to get into a retail chain and you've been working with the buyer for quite some time. You're trying to get them to look at you and replace, one of the competitors. And what you've chosen to with our tool is you've actually put that competitor into your brand explorer. Now, what that's going to allow you to do is not only keep track of them in terms of what their activity is at that dispensary. Like we literally have in the tool, a simple, tabular filterable view that shows you all of the menu items that we're seeing in market. So you can actually drill down and see how your customers' products are priced, where they're carried, and if they're getting close to selling out or if the product isn't selling. These are all big signals that you can now, as the head of sales at Miss Grass, you can walk that into the wholesale and say, look, this is what we're seeing in market. We think we're going to fill this need for you. Right. So you're informing yourself of what's happening in market and using that information to walk into your meeting. Incredibly tactical. Right. On the flip side, right, if you're a dispensary, Miss Grass came in and said, hey, we're in 70 dispensaries in the state. You go, OK, let me check that out. Right. And so you can use this tool, add that brand and see very quickly like, oh, wow, Miss Grass is in 70 dispensaries. They're legit. Right. So there's a lot on both sides, both brands and retailers, this idea of democratizing the data set so that everyone's looking at the same thing. Right. And now we get down to what? Competing on customer needs, quality of product, same rules apply. Right. And so that's the vision that we see is bringing brands and retailers, distributors, all of those in the kind of finished product and beyond supply chain and giving them a data set that they not only can all agree on, but also can take action on. And so what we've seen out of the gate is, I think what we've been surprised by out of the gate is the distribution of use cases between brands and retailers. I think when Cody, Nate, and Austin launched this tool, I think they really thought that this was like a tool for brands and wholesalers, right? Like that's really what the use case is going to be. Enter a couple of our retail friends. And they were like, from a competitive intelligence perspective, this is exactly what we need, right? And so out of the gate, these, immediately, as we were talking about with early stage companies, they had to pivot. They said, okay, we need to release a retailer specific feature set, which we've got something so cool coming. I gotta give a little sneak peek at this. So you go to buy an iPhone, right? You select a model and then you can compare to the different models, right? We're working on a UI where you can do that with both cannabis brands or cannabis retailer locations. So now if I'm in Springfield, Massachusetts, right, and I've got a dispensary there, I can add the four other dispensaries within a 10-mile radius of me and keep an ongoing track and kind of leaderboard about how we're competing on product mix, pricing, velocity, all types of different things. So we're pretty excited about that one. And let's just say there's plenty of arguments about priority as it relates to that that feature, because we're all pretty excited about it.
Rightfully so. And to kind of elaborate on that, it seems like one of the biggest challenges your team is solving is the accuracy of data, right? Because making informed decision relies on having a data set that you can trust that is accurate. And if you don't have that, you're kind of flying blind. So back to your example, if Miss Grass comes in, sure, they're familiar with the brand, but how well are they selling? They kind of have to trust, maybe have to make multiple phone calls, and then they're still kind of a leap of faith. But if they see the dashboard and they recognize, wow, this product is flying in Arizona, flying in Florida, we've got similar demographics, we definitely need to look to incorporate it sooner and later into our platform.
Yeah. And I think that, I want to also highlight that, the data set that we're working with is meant to be tactical in nature, right? This is not for financial reconciliation. This is to give you the real-time signal. One of our co-founders, Cody, says one of the screens that we have is an activity feed where you can literally see what's happening with your brand in market on all the different menus, all the actions that we're tracking. He's like, this is Twitter for cannabis wholesale, right? That's basically what it is. You're seeing that real-time feed. I think it's a great way of describing what it is. And so now, if you're using both a tool like Lit Alerts for your sales and field marketing team to get that high frequency real-time data, and then you're backing that up with your financial reconciliation, those two data sets alone and the relationship between the two of them, you get a good sense of that and you get a good handle on that. You've got a great read on your markets and you're able to act fast, right, with our data set, but also be able to go back at the end of the month with your, you know, sales data and ensure that you're making the right decision. So you're increasing not only the volume and quality, but you're also, you know, increasing the instances with which you can actually evaluate your strategy, which I think is really important, right? Like most companies look at a single source of truth. They're all waiting for the monthly report. They're all waiting, oh, let's see how we did. Let's see how we did. Well, there's 3 weeks there where you were all waiting to see how you did, right? And so that's the gap that we're trying to close is don't wait. Log into Little Alerts and see what's happening in market right now and let that information guide what you're doing this week and next. You know what was really interesting when they were building this tool? And I was surprised by this as well. You know, I started banging around on the tool like in September or October when I first joined up with this team. And I, you know, I, one of the first things I said was like, look, like I can't go back, you know, in the historicals, you know, what if I want to see, you know, 9 months ago? And they all started laughing. They were basically like, none of our customers, the teams that are using this, nobody cares about 9 months ago. You're talking about sellers. You're talking about field marketers. That is like ancient history, right? And so we have this data set that is, you know, it is, it expires on some level, right? Like it is like if you're looking at our data set from 6 months ago, many of those menu items, they're not even live on the menus anymore, right? They're not even being sold. And so it's the recency that is powerful about what we're doing. But then again, like we talked about before, like I think one of the biggest differentiators we have going is just it's just that simple to get in and out of the tool, pull data out of it, you know, just simple views that people are used to working with.
And it creates a transparency within these conversations, right? Like Ms. Grass is going in, they're both have this democratized data. So it's also helping people get deals done quicker, and every business now can be running significantly more efficiently. Was that always Absolutely. The intention from the founders when they launched it?
100%. Yeah, I'd say you hit it. Yeah, I would say you hit it. I mean, like Nate's an operator, right? And so like our cheat code is, you know, Nate's operation. I mean, we have three cheat codes, right? We've got Nate's operations, experience, and network. Cody's hustle, and Austin, the CTO, his brain. And so being able to, you know, these guys put these three things together, these three skill sets together to achieve that goal. It's like we're trying to make people more efficient. We're trying to make the operators in cannabis just feel more informed. That's powerful, right? If you're a seller and you have information to work off of to make your decisions, that's game changing. And I think that, you know, we're hearing from a lot of our customers, you know, up until using Little Alerts, we were kind of flying blind, you know, on a lot of the decisions that we're making. And it's now really easy for us to go in, take a look at something quickly, and then out, right? This is not an app where we're looking at time spent, right? We're looking at, we're trying to affect outcome. And so, you know, one of the things that we built into the tool, look, it was called Little Alerts for a reason, right? The end goal here is to create an alert system that you can customize that brings you the information that you need. We don't have any dreams of the first thing everyone does every morning is I got to log into Little Alerts, right? But if I get an email every morning that highlights for me the low quantity and out of stock retailers, that's a place for me to start. That's a real problem that I'm solving. I just delivered information to you that you're going to spend probably a couple hours in the morning Google searching, going through menus, getting on the phone, trying to figure out, you know, my low quantity here, my out of stock here. And don't get me wrong, there are other solutions like a headset bridge and whatnot. And if you've got the budget and if you've got kind of the clout in the industry to get your retailers to opt in their data, there's some ways to do this, but it's not as complete as, you know, the real-time data set that we're working. We think Headset Bridge is an example of something that's also in the toolkit, right? And so making these things interoperable and making them affordable enough where, you know, your average brand can bring on these tools, you know, within budget is really important to us.
And as fortunately, as you described, one of the limitations of the industry is capital and affording things. But I know you also at Knight are an investor in a few companies. And I want you to give a quick shout out to some of the companies that you are invested in. And then for the people who are listening, who are building right now in cannabis and are looking for, say, hey, someone like Rick, who may be interested in my company, what are you looking for? And what should founders be looking for to build in order to attract an investor like yours, given the limitations in the industry today?
Yeah, sure. So just really quickly, I started this group, Receptive Capital Syndicate. So it's a group of now 103 accredited investors. And we look at the earliest stage cannabis companies on the East Coast, mainly focused on IP-driven companies. So companies that are producing intellectual property. So that could be a brand, software companies, research and development companies. You won't see us investing in cultivation or retail. You know, candidly, it's the checks that we're writing are not big enough to do the damage that's necessary with cultivation and retail. It's, you know, pretty sizable effort. And yeah, our portfolio companies right now, Cantrip, great cannabis beverage out of Massachusetts, Miss Grass. So I'm like, the whole alum is coming together now on this podcast. But we also invest in a company called Trim, which is, I would put them in the group, even though they've been around for a long time. I would put them in the group of folks that are focused on simplicity, automation, and being good at one thing. And so we've been really impressed with how Trim has progressed over the last few years. We're excited about what they're doing. They're cultivation software. But I'll tell you this, Brian, to answer your question, you know, Grit's at the number one spot in the list, like by far. So like we need to get a sense that, you know, it has to be. You have to be able to demonstrate that in your career, you've gotten around a lot of really tough problems for us to take you seriously as a founder. You know, if you start a company in cannabis, it's not week one. It's not, it's first minute you're going to have a challenge that you didn't see coming. And so that's the first thing that we're looking for is like, what have you done in the past? You know, look, one of the folks that we were thinking about investing in and got really far down the line, we leaned forward because they had a bunch of projects that they've worked on and none of them were necessarily successful. But the stories that were told around what the founder had gotten around is like, okay, this person has it. Like this person has the ability. They're still here knocking, right? As you know, a lot of things have to go right for an investment to go through. But yeah, I would say, you know, being able to demonstrate in your past that not necessarily you worked for McKinsey or Google or whatever, but like you got around like a pretty serious problem that you solved for a company or for a product. Like that's the kind of background that we're looking for. Revenue producing. So we're not really looking at anyone who's coming to us with an idea. We get a lot of pre-launch pitches. It's 2024. Get your product out there. Get something done. And then raise money. Like I can't emphasize this enough for a couple of reasons. Number one, I don't think entrepreneurs realize this, but they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. The minute you take on external capital, you work for someone else. I know, and I know it sounds crazy, but you do, right? Like you work for someone else. And so those early days where you're solving a problem, creating a first project, it's not going to get any simpler in terms of complexity than those early days. And bringing on an investor during those early days is quite possibly the single thing you could do to complicate those early days, right? Because all of a sudden you've got another voice in your head that says, you got to go chase this. We got a company we want you to look at, right? If you can hold out as long as it's not easy, I don't want to minimize. It's not easy to bootstrap. It's not, I mean, talk to Nate and Cody and Austin, like, it is not an easy thing to do, but if you can hold out, like launch your product, book some revenue, have a story to tell, because the days of raising off of a deck, they're over. They're probably not coming back either, at least not in our lifetime. I had someone recently, you know, compare themselves to like a Facebook Airbnb type of thing. And it was like, look, if you're coming in with that pitch, you're in the wrong decade. Right? Like the capital's not out looking for these stories right now. And not for nothing, a lot of these companies that, you know, they may have been big stories and may have been big names, but they never made any money. Right. And so I think that the focus now, even in the folks that in the investment world that I look up to and I follow and have even co-invested with, I'm hearing the KPIs change. They're changing from TAM and capture and all these different things to profitability. And are you, you know, manageable growth? And, you know, people are now like the hockey stick growth that everyone was looking for. Those are starting to become red flags in pitches. So I think that, you know, a lot of what's needed from an entrepreneur's perspective is like, it's changing, but I think it's changing for the better. I think it's changing in the favor of entrepreneurs.
I think that's so important. And I think there's so many people out there who maybe had one perception of what they needed to do in order to get to X, Y, and Z. And I think hearing it from someone like yourself who's done this and kind of put their money where their mouth is in so many areas, but also operates in this space would be really beneficial for them. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. And I'll just add really quickly, Brian, like across all the investments that we went through with, like at the end of the day, the bottom line was we're definitely investing in the people.
The jockey.
Yeah. It seems like a cliche, but it's just like when you're early on, even when you've got product, you've got revenue, the whole nine, it's like, you know, when we took a look at Trim, it's like, you know, the operating group there at Trim, they're no joke. They know what they're doing. They've done this in another industry. You know, Adam and Dylan from Cantrip, these guys are seasoned operators for young folk. They're pretty seasoned, right? And then Miss Grass, like nobody's doing better than Kate. So, you know, there was a lot of the, you know, when we step into these deals, like some of the stuff from like a founder perspective, there's no middle ground. It's either like you show up and it's like, man, they got it, or they show up and you're like, not getting the feel, right? Yeah. And so I'd encourage entrepreneurs to kind of find their grit and expose it as part of the process, because I think that's really what people are looking for now. I mean, in terms of ideas, the three of us could sit here and come up with 100 of them right now, right?
Like, easy.
It's not that hard. And nowadays you just like spit some fire into ChatGPT or whatever, and they, you know, make you a website and a PowerPoint and the whole nine. Like, we, you know,
not
so I'm waiting for the VC to come up with like the, like, what are those, the incubators where they're just like shouting stuff into a box and, you know, come back with ideas. But we all know how those wind up. But
love it.
Yeah.
Slightly switching gears. What is the most expensive lesson you've ever learned?
Ever? I would say the most expensive lesson I've ever learned is, man, there's a lot that's coming to mind right now. You gotta be on the same page with the people that you're working with on a daily basis. That one's been a really expensive one for me. You know, I like to think of myself as someone who can kind of, you know, find the same kind of people to work with and kind of at least a decent judge of folks that I'm coming to, but I've definitely been wrong. And it hurts when that happens. And I think that, you know, when you're evaluating opportunities in cannabis, especially in cannabis, spend a lot of time with the people that you'll be working with before you jump in, if you can, right? You know, and not so much in like an interview setting, right? Like try and get that hiring manager or that founder out for a coffee or a drink or smoke a joint with them and really get a sense for what makes them tick, because, you know, a lot of the hiring, a lot of the investing, a lot of the activities that are critical to cannabis, they happen very fast. A lot of it's necessity. We're running out of money. I got to close this deal, right? We're exploding. I got to hire this person. So it's not always possible to have the time. But man, the most expensive things in my career have definitely been aligning myself with the wrong people. I'm thankful it's only happened to me once or twice, but, yeah, I think those were the biggest burns. A lot of the other stuff rolls right off someone like me, just because when you've been in the startup game long enough, you know, you take hits every week. And so it's just kind of like every Monday is exciting because it's like restart button on Nintendo.
What question do you wish more people asked you?
Do I wish more people asked me? Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. I would say I wish more people asked why I'm in cannabis. I think that I got that question a lot when I first got into the industry, and I think it was a good thing to remind yourself of, right? Like I got into cannabis because there was just pure interest and pure passion. Like when I say that story earlier, like my wife is like literally making fun of me because I'm working this full-time job. I'm spending every waking moment outside of it, like reading or talking about cannabis. And so I kind of miss answering that question. Right. Like I kind of miss, I think that question's kind of gone away as the industry is maturing. So like, it seems like a kind of a BS question, but I miss that question. I miss being able to talk about, you know, finding out about the medical aspects of all of this, finding out about use cases of hemp, the difference. But, you know, I mean, when I got into this space, every cannabis beverage that I tried tastes disgusting. It was like 100-milligram beverage that tasted like weed. And look, I'm a joint smoker, so like I love the smell of weed, but I don't want to drink a beverage that tastes like weed, right? And so I think that like seeing how this industry has progressed over time, I think kind of changes some of the reasons that you're in it. And so I wish I got to answer that question a little more, because I think it's changing for me as I go. That was kind of a weak
answer. No, I think it's perfect. I think it's perfect. There's no right answer. And just to piggyback off your beverage and give Adam a shout out, a cantrip is first time I gave out that beverage, someone said to me, "Is there weed in here?" And I said, "Yes." And he's like, "Will I get high?" And I said, "Yes." And the confusion on their face was just spectacular. And I think that is the paradox of we're opening people's eyes to what is to come in the future. And I just wanted to shout out Adam there.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this, man, my mother-in-law, if I asked her to smoke a joint with me every day for the rest of her life, the answer would be no. She drinks cantrip.
Bang. Thanks for paying for the podcast.
For a million. Yeah, right. No, but for real, man. It is, when I look at beverage, it's, the same reason that, I kind of lean forward on it is, I was walking through a grocery store and I thought to myself, there's never going to be flour here. There's never going to be pre-rolls here. There's never going to be gummies here. But there's an entire regulated beverage section just sitting there waiting to be disrupted with all these ugly Bud Light cans. Right. And so I think the beverage is going to be the equalizer at some point. A lot of it has to do with supply chain issues at this point, but I think that, it's interesting dynamic between the hemp business and the cannabis business, which the joke's on everyone because it's one business. So
don't tell regulators.
Working together. Yeah, I know.
All right. Prediction time. Rick, with tools like ChatGPT becoming widely used, will companies look to integrate more software team members into their core foundation as a startup?
So I think, I think it's going to be more partnering with the right tool sets, like a Little Earth or Canversions, as opposed to bringing that in-house. For me, and this is just an observation, I'm happy to argue this point, but if you look around at the cannabis brands and retailers that are doing really well, they focus on selling weed. They don't focus on building a software tool or hiring someone to... They focus on people who can grow, produce, and sell weed really well, right? Let nerds like me focus on the software tools that you need. And so I don't see that. I don't see that cannabis companies will hire software employees, but I think that my prediction is that cannabis companies are finally going to buddy up with software companies and recognize that software can have kind of this big bad wolf, evil kind of easy money realm to it. But it's the game changer as it relates to how you differentiate yourself in a maturing market, right? How do you create margin as a cultivator? You have to be dialing, you have to have this dialed in so well, right? So Trim comes in and solves that for you. When you're a brand that's expanding to a new market, you don't know much about the retailer activity on a day-to-day basis, you need Little Earths. You need this tool, but you're not hiring a software person. You're hiring a seller who knows how to sell weed. You're hiring a field marketer who knows how to get the word of mouth going in market, right? But they're using software tools. So I would say that the toolkit is going to get bigger for cannabis companies for software. And I think it's a really exciting time for folks like you guys and Little Earths and Canaversions and a host of others.
Love it. Kellen.
I mean, I agree. I think that it's easy to throw around bring someone in with software. But the moment you bring someone in with software experience, they're going to need a team of people. Now they need resources, right? And all of a sudden, I mean, if it wasn't hard enough running a vertically integrated cannabis company where you have a cultivation business, you have a retail business, an extraction business, you're already running four or five other completely unrelated businesses. That is how they would occur in the other industries, right? From agriculture to chemistry to retail to consumer packaged goods. Now you're like, you know what? Let's also do software at the same time. I just think that the moment you start looking to build the tools in-house that already exist, it just becomes an instant distraction for your organization, and you're not focusing on what the core business model really is, which if you're a cannabis company, it is to grow high quality cannabis and sell the product, right? And all of these are just tools that become a luxury if you're successful at selling the cannabis and you want to get better at that, you go get a tool, right, to make it happen faster. So that's my opinion. What do you think, Brian?
I think we're all in agreement there. And I think it's like the old adage of like buy versus build. And maybe for outside industry companies who have 20,000 employees who are paying $30 a seat for their 20,000 employees, those numbers add up fast. And I think in those instances, those companies may look to build those tools in-house, which I think will be a big disruptor for some of the other companies in the outside industry. But in the cannabis industry, where things are so limited, and exactly like we talked about, they are doing endless challenges within themselves, adding an additional one seems unnecessary. But where I do think are really big opportunities in the future are exactly like what you said today, Rick, which is Little Alerts and Cannaversion, the ability that they found a problem internally, built a solution with the software for themselves first, then recognized, hey, this is applicable for the outside world. And I think that is where I'm bullish on. And I think tools like ChatGPT can help accelerate, let's say, the going from idea to MVP pretty quickly. And with the scrappiness that the industry operates currently in, I would expect that to continue to accelerate going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I just to add to that, right? Like for the industry, taking a look at this from an industry value perspective, it's not efficient for all of us to be building our own software. It's just not, right? It just doesn't make any sense for all of us to be building, because it just adds to the problem of a lack of interoperability. The end goal here is we should be competing on quality of product and service for our customers, not trying to corner them out, right? And so if we can as an industry kind of, you know, hone in on that as the goal, and look, we're challenging this with Little Alerts. Maybe some of the software doesn't have to be as expensive as it is today, right? If you're building the way we're building, the business model can be a little friendlier. So look out for us to definitely be, you know, pushing that envelope as well, because, you know, if you just look outside of cannabis, some of the stuff is not even as expensive. I understand some of the premiums we pay. I'm not sure we understand the premiums that we're paying on software. So we're trying to disrupt that as well.
Love it. So for our listeners, they want to get in touch, they want to check out some of the products, where can they find you?
Yeah. So littlealerts.com is the best place to check out Little Alerts, and cannaversions.com as well. And then if you want to check out and want some resources on the investing side, you can go to receptivecap.com. And, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. I'm pretty active on there, both posting and engaging. It's kind of the home for cannabis business. And so, hit me up there. And we hope to hear from customers and new prospects alike. Hit us up.
Appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. This was a lot of fun.
Guys, if you've enjoyed this podcast over the last few years, can you please take 3 minutes or less and leave us a quick review on Apple or Spotify? All reviews make a massive difference for us and help other people like you find this podcast. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Are you looking for the next great cannabis business to invest in? Then you need to check out the MJ Bulls podcast. Hi, I'm Dan Humiston. Join me each week as I speak to both cannabis entrepreneurs who are raising capital and cannabis investors who are investing capital. Our 10-minute episodes are perfect for the busy investor. Start listening to the MJ Bulls podcast today, wherever you listen to podcasts, and who knows, maybe you'll discover the next cannabis unicorn.